At 6:09, I will bring the City Council meeting of March the 28th to order. Now we'd like to have a moment of silence, please. And if we could stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
If we could have roll call, please.
Charlie Hawkins.
Here.
Dennis Olison.
Here.
Harry Robinson.
Here.
Steve Lawrenson.
Here.
Mary Lou Stewart.
Here.
Paul Greeno.
Here.
Bonnie Onion requested to be excused.
I entertain a motion.
So move.
Motion has been made and seconded. Any questions or comments? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Motion carries 6-0. Okay, audience participation, has anyone signed up to speak this evening? Thank you. We have a number of people that wish to speak. Sandy, is it Sandy Schiebel? Sandy, if you would be kind enough to come up to the Mike, and please give us your name and address for the records, please.
Sandy Schiebel, 9726 Vista Terrace. And I would like to say something about the LID.
Fine.
We moved here 4 years ago. We'd lived in Kenya, Africa for 5 years, and now we've been here for 4 years, and I really like Blaine. And I think it's, overall, I like to see it grow, but I'm very upset that it's being grown, I feel like, on our backs. If we had applied for a mortgage that was $200 more than what we're paying now, I don't think we would have been accepted. And basically, that's what we're being asked to do. We are hooked up to sewer. We hooked up about a month ago. So our septic tank was in good shape, but I didn't think it was the best, so we decided to hook up to sewer. The sewer prices are high. That's adding to it. That's okay. I don't mind paying something for the LID, but it's upsetting the whole neighborhood. This is not an upper-class neighborhood. I'm very comfortable in our neighborhood. I love it. It's mixed. It's families. It's old people. It's, you know, middle people with grown kids. It's a great neighborhood, but our neighbors are talking about moving. They can't pay the bills. And, you know, what's this going to do to the neighborhood if you just totally upend it? It's just not a good situation. And I know you're thinking about it, and I know you're discussing it, and I just wanted to put my 2 cents in. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Sandy. Appreciate it. Next person is Cindy. Is it Brandenberger? Did I get that right, Cindy? If you'd be kind enough to state your name and address for the records.
I am Cynthia Brandenberger. My address is 3370 Sweet Road, Blaine, Washington. And my purpose here is to talk again about our three-sided school zone. And I just want to y'all to know that, you know, I presented it 2 weeks ago. I've recently spoken to the office of Doug Erickson and both representatives, so I'm working on it in that direction, and I want to make this a go, that Highway 543 become under the power of the City of Blaine as a school zone, so our children are protected, and that hope line that cuts through the middle of our town is removed. And I'm open for any comments, anybody to give me ideas of who to talk to and where to go next. As I said last time I spoke to y'all to just share my, I've been on this issue for probably 25 years.
Cynthia, I would refer you to the city manager, and he can probably give you some ideas as to people you can approach.
And that's you. Okay. Well, I would love to speak with you on this issue, and I have little drawings I've made out. I just had said I would be back, and I wanted to keep my word. If there's anything else or anyone would like to speak to me about this issue, I'd love to walk you through it. Oh, there are no sidewalks where people can walk safely down that road either. And that could be something. I am a rancher's daughter from Oklahoma, horse trader, and so I felt like if I went in asking Doug Erickson's office to not only relinquish that highway, the city to Blaine, but change the name to the Blaine School Road, and the 25 constant miles per hour, but I told them that they needed to clean up that area between the school and Highway 543 because I figured it'd be better to ask for a little more, and then we can always go down a little bit. So that's how I presented it, and I'm open for suggestions. Or
appreciate your comments.
Thank you very much.
Carol Solomon, would you like to please come forward? State your name and address for the records, please.
I'm Carol Solomon, 4275 Sweet Road in Blaine. I hadn't planned on speaking, but my usual spokesperson is not here, so I'm just going to take a minute. I'm here on behalf of the Friends of the Library. I'm the president of that organization. And we just recently had a concert at the Performing Arts Center, and some of you were there. Thank you very much for coming. It was a monstrously huge success. We did extremely well. We sold 341 tickets, which was more than we expected, and the feedback we got was just phenomenal. So many people want to do it again next year or sooner if it could be done. So it was a really great success. And I don't have the figures for the profits from this yet, but any profits that we get from this will be going into the Library Improvement Fund. And I just wanted to keep you apprised of the situation and let you know what we're doing and how we're doing. And that's all.
Appreciate it very much, Carol.
Anybody have a question for me? Okay, thank
okay.
you.
Next item, next individual is Jim Zell. Jim, if you would be kind enough to come forward and state your name and address for the record, please.
Oh, my name's Jim Zell. I'm at 270 Clark Street in Blaine. And it's been a long time, a number of years since I've been up here in front of you people. And I have both chewed you out and praised you. But I just saw a couple days ago, a documentary. Right now, well, let me backtrack a second here. We all know that there is a lot of mistrust and fear about government, almost at any level, but federal government for sure. And there is a feeling of hatred and fear and frustration. And I saw a documentary of where communities were going counter to what the federal government's going. It showed where being three groups of people cooperating together, city government, Chamber of Commerce, and the churches, improved the cities. They did something, because we in our federal government's not doing much right now. But they did something. They improved the economic and the social aspect of the community that they were in. There's a number of cities, some that you'd recognize. I can't remember the names. But one thing that they were transparent. And I feel that you people do your work, work hard, and think maybe you're overcome with things. But if the city council could lead out in trying to get a cooperation of the city as a whole to improve the city of Blaine. And there's and the main thing is, it'd be nice, I haven't seen it as much, transparency in what you're doing. If you could let the people know what you were doing, because there's a lot of concern that people have had, and they're not seeing any results, or they're not feeling that anything's being done. So I feel that you need to have a more openness with the city, so they'll know that you're doing something. And the thing is, I feel that the city council could, that like those cooperation between the city city government, Chamber of Commerce, and the churches, and Blaine could be a terrific place to live. I love it. That's why I came back here. But we need to know more of what you're doing. And there's one thing, like I mentioned, why I'm here basically, is a few months ago, I work in the Visitor Center, which is one of the best things for the city of Blaine, because it's a place where people come and they want answers and questions to their questions. But a number of times, I've had someone come in from out of town, and they looked at our sign, which is a sandwich board, it's a sign anyway, but they looked at that sign, even though I try when I'm out there to point it towards the building. But they look, when they're coming down Peace Portal, they look at it and they say, hey, it's down H Street. So they go all the way down to the truck route, the mall, and turn around, come back, and they finally found it. And they weren't mad, but they were frustrated. So, and I brought that up, and I haven't heard, I didn't bring it up here, but I brought it up to the powers to be, and I haven't heard anything about it. There may have been a lot of work done on it, but there's no results, which I can understand. There may not be reasons for no results, but if we were informed of that it's being worked on, I'd appreciate that. And one thing, I want to compliment one person here. He's the right arm of the law here. He is very tactful. I was repairing the garlands and things down at the old airport, and he came by because he saw a strange car out in front of the hangar. But he was very tactful. He says, oh, I've never been in here. I just want to see what's going on. And I know he was checking up to see if I wasn't up to something wrong. But thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Jim.
What was that?
I'll keep working on it.
And thank you for being a volunteer at the Visitor Center.
You know what's going on here. Working with the library, I'm now, all I got to do is get a camera that shoots in raw format, and we'll do the archiving the Blaine papers and photographs, like I got from Steve, that I got changed from JPEG to raw. But it's going to be, this is for the library and people.
Thank you again for your comments. Okay, next item on the agenda is written communications.
We received an email dated March 22nd from Sarah Scheibaugh regarding the annual brunch event for Compass to Campus, which is the Western Washington University program, and which will also be a retirement send-off for Cindy Shepherd.
Thank you. Okay, the next item on the agenda is the consent agenda. Approval of bills in the amount of $119,789.06. Approval of the council minutes for March the 14th, 2016. The reappointment of Public Works Advisory Committee members. I believe there's more. Contract extension for the Birch Bay Water and Sewer District and the project completion for the Semiamo Spit Erosion.
Harry, could we pull number four out of that group?
You want it?
I want to ask some questions about that one.
Okay, well, do you want to have a motion first and then?
Anyway, just to take a look at it.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion. Please, guys, come on.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, motion has been made and second. Any discussion? It's the consent agenda. Approval of the consent agenda.
Okay, but one council member is asked to approve the minutes.
That's coming up under discussion.
As I read it, any item can be removed and placed on the first regular agenda at the request of the council member. So I'm not sure we need to discuss it. I think it's just wrong.
So, would someone like to make a motion that we remove the contract extension from the Birch Bay Water and Sewer District from the consent agenda?
Me. I have just a question.
Charlie, do you have a question?
The question is, Dennis has questions about it. Can we talk about that as part of the general discussion of the consent agenda and then decide whether to pull it out if we want to or not?
Sure.
I mean, I don't know how it's supposed
We've got a motion on the floor, and someone can amend the motion if they so desire. And
I just have a question.
We can vote. Okay. Well, okay. That's what we're here for. So we got questions and discussion. So fire away.
The question I had has to do with page 204 under. Original terms amended. I just had trouble trying to figure out what was going on with that statement.
Okay, Raven, is that, did you get a chance to hear what Mr.
I apologize. I tried to catch the citizen before she took off.
Okay.
This is regarding the Birch Bay Water and Sewer.
Yes, Dennis has brought up the fact that on page 2-4, he was having a little difficulty understanding I guess it's under 9/11.
Yeah.
What that means.
Okay, so section 9/11 of the original agreement talks about how we determine costs based on essentially the capacity of the system. It's a very complex contract. The formula is based on the production of our system, and we have not been able to institute the completion of the telemetry improvements in the well field. So each year we've been doing a contract amendment to push that time off a little bit more and a little bit more, and here we actually have both projects going out to bid this year. So it is our feeling that we're with this amendment, we won't have another amendment of this nature, and we will finally be able to look at real information in terms of what our production is in each well, what's our total production out of the master meter, how much is going to Birch Bay. Their system is much more sophisticated than ours, and we're trying to catch up.
Well, I guess my concern is we're providing water to Birch Bay, and do we do it just by volume? And I guess where I was having trouble was, why are we going back to the wells and talking about all that if it's just a matter of supplying a certain volume of water.
It's not that simple, and that's why. It's a lot more than just the volume of water, and I'd have to literally go back and do a study session on that contract to give you some of the complexities of it. Roger actually had a PowerPoint at one time, and he's got this chart. But in any event, it has to do with the our total production, what percent they're taking, which source they're taking it from, because they have a connection at Hall Road and they have a connection at Semiahmoo. There are other costs that are allocated each year through a true-up, which includes fixed asset costs or improvements that we do within the well field. They pay a portion of versus improvements that we do outside of the well field. So what I could do, if you would like, is come back with a more of a informational section on this contract and its complexity, but suffice to say that this one particular portion of the contract, section 911, we have not been able to comply with, essentially. And this just gives us a little bit more time to do that.
I'd hate to explain that to somebody.
Wait till you see the chart that Roger made for me to try to explain it to me. We only got through like two-thirds of it before my brain went numb. But, or if you would like, sir, at the end of the next, if you're going to make our Public Works Advisory Committee meeting next week, I can take a few more minutes at your time at the end of that meeting and go through it with you.
Yeah, I got into this thing and I'm thinking, I don't understand a thing about what you're doing.
Yeah, the contract, I think there's one thing that preparing this for you this evening that we discussed as staff was that the contract is very complex, and moving into the future, it would be nice to work on simplifying it.
That would be good.
Yes.
Thank you.
Are there any other further questions or comments? Okay, there is a motion on the table to approve the consent agenda. The motion has been made and seconded. Are there any other questions or comments? If not, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, say no. Motion is carried 6-0. Next item on our agenda is a public hearing on the Shoreline Master Program update, and it's a continuation of our previous public hearing. And we'll have Mr. Jones present it, and then if anyone wishes to speak to the issue, they're welcome to come forward.
Mr. Mayor, I have no new testimony on this item, except to say that if no one else wishes to testify tonight, I would recommend that you close the public hearing, or at the end of testimony tonight, close the public hearing. It is an action item this evening, and I would be happy to entertain any questions and discussion at that time.
Okay. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to speak to the Shoreline Master Program update? Do you want to have a question?
I just want to make a comment that refers to the shoreline. In the Shoreline Master Program, there is a section, and I'm sorry, Michael, I left my copy at home, but it has to do with vegetation. And as part of the shoreline takes in the Semiahmoo Resort Association, that I'm trying to make sure that the city council and their shoreline plan is not in contradiction to the standards set by the Semiahmoo Resort Association. And this is where we had a meeting with Michael Jones, Paul Greeno, and myself, and the SRA executive to discuss this. And we came to a common understanding. One of the problems is that regulations for vegetation as outlined by those properties within the Semiahmoo Resort Association are stricter than allow for in the shoreline. So there is potential for conflict here, and it has happened in the past that people within Semiahmoo Resort have gone around the Semiahmoo Resort guidelines, the CCNRs, to come to the city and use the city's regulations to overturn the SRA. And this does nothing but cause animosity within the rest of the homeowners in the Semiahmoo Resort area. And so what I would like to see is some sort of agreement. Earlier this evening, Michael, you and I spoke about this and said that the city is not able legally to allow us, the Semiahmoo Resort Association, to have complete jurisdiction over this because it would be giving us potentially legal responsibility, which would be in conflict with the city. So what we're trying to do is find some common ground that we can incorporate into the Shoreline Master Plan that makes both sides happy.
Mr. Johnson, it might be best to close the public hearing and have that discussion during the action item.
I agree.
As a matter of practice.
I agree. Okay, is there anyone that wishes to speak to the Shoreline Master Program update? Seeing none, I will bring the public hearing to a close. Next item on our agenda will be the council action items. The first item is the economic development element of the comprehensive plan. And that is going to be presented by Mr. Jones.
I'm going to be up here a lot tonight.
Uh-huh.
The item here before you is requesting your preliminary approval of the economic development element or chapter of the comprehensive plan. As you will recall, we've brought forward draft elements as they've been prepared. It allows us to move forward knowing that that one is pretty much finished and move on to the next task at hand. We started early on in this process with things like population and then figured out the land use modifications that we might need to accommodate the population and such and move forward. So different steps rely on others. The economic development chapter less so, relying on other things, and has less effect on other chapters. But nonetheless, each chapter has come forward as it has been developed. The Planning Commission has sent this forward to you for your consideration. And this is quite a bit of new language. The old economic development chapter was full of a lot of data that has become quite out of date as we've moved almost a decade into the comprehensive plan. It also spoke in a great deal of the focus was on the Blaine Urban Waterfront Development Plan, which was an older sort of version of the Wharf District Master Plan and an older version of some of the downtown development plans, and a lot of that has been incorporated. A lot of that's been done already, and a lot of that's been incorporated into other planning documents. So there's much less reliance on that in this document, and you will see if you've had a chance to read through the goals and policies, it's pretty specific and works to be pretty strong in supporting economic development efforts, actions the city should take, where the city should focus its energy on economic development, and how the city staff, Planning Commission, and Council should act in regards to consideration of different economic development opportunities. Things so much so as like saying that the Planning Commission should consider conditional use permits in a liberal manner in regards to economic development, and the staff should interpret the downtown code in a liberal manner to encourage new construction and new development that is not contradictory with the goals of the plan. So it doesn't mean we throw out the rules, but it says, you know, if someone comes in and their plans, their thing is a little bit different than what we had in mind, well, we shouldn't be saying, well, that's a little different, you don't get to do that. It's giving us direction to say, well, that's a little different, but seems like a pretty good idea, and trying to find a way to make that happen. So unless you have any questions for me, it really is pretty straightforward. This has been through the Economic Development Advisory Committee for their consideration. It's been through the Planning Commission for a public hearing and their consideration, and the Commission has sent it forward to you for your preliminary acceptance.
I have a question.
Go ahead, Charlie.
It seems like to me that when you don't have kind of a pretty good idea what you want to do, that you get in that gray area that somebody comes along, and I'm not going to say names, but we spent thousands, if not tens of thousands of dollars of legal fees because people were trying to do things a little bit off the edge of what we were supposed to let them do and stuff like that. So, I mean, are we opening ourselves back up to that situation again with that kind of terminology in this plan?
No, I don't think so. We have some solid regulations, and this is the comprehensive plan is advisory policy, and the code is what are the rules and regulations. So that, you know, our code is in pretty good shape, but this would just, you know, give the city guidance to, you know, work towards economic development. That doesn't mean accept a plan that we don't want.
Yes, Dennis. Michael, I guess it's on page 3 of 11, D. They talk about parking for the railroad, but there's nothing in there of step to try and get a stop. I was wondering if that should be included.
It's in the transportation element. That kind of language is primarily in the transportation element, and that is not here yet, not to you yet.
Okay. So this would be going to the state?
When the whole thing is packaged, it will go to the state. We send forward the whole comp plan all at once. So what we're doing is kind of assembling the chapters that are done or very close to done. We'll put it all together, make the last amendments and changes, add the last bits of data that we haven't collected yet. And then it will all go to the Planning Commission in May or very early June, recommend for their final review and a recommendation from them for approval, which would then send it to you in its final version. So you'll get all the chapters together then, and then that will, if you approve it, will be sent to the state.
So what you need is that this portion to be taken care of.
Yeah, we would, staff would like a motion to preliminarily approve the economic development element of the 2016 City of Blaine Comprehensive Plan.
So moved, Harry.
Second. Okay, move. Motion has been made and seconded.
Sorry, and Your Honor, who seconded?
Dennis seconded.
Okay. The only thing, Michael, just as a comment, and I know this is the most difficult thing to do, is, I guess, to somewhere state in there that have an active role in getting economic development to the city. In other words, I know we've said all those other things, but now what I sometimes hear is, why isn't the city council doing something to attract business? Why don't we have sort of somebody working full-time to attract economic development, like having an economic development officer working full-time? And I get the impression that that's sometimes an expectation of the public, that we should be doing more to attract business. In other words, we should be, rather than, you know, we should be going out approaching businesses, or going out and seeking businesses, if I'm stating it correctly. And I'm just saying, I don't know if we've stated that, if that's really what we all agree on, and if so, if it's been stated in the policy. Was that ever discussed? Was that ever sort of, people debated that point, that we should, city really has an obligation?
No one said it in the way that you just did in regards to the idea of the city should hire an economic development officer or the city should add a staff person dedicated to this activity. That would actually be something the Planning Commission would typically not discuss, and we would shy them away from that because that's a council decision. So for that reason, that didn't really come up there. The Economic Development Advisory Committee talks about, you know, things generally in a way around that issue, but I don't. There was not that discussion. when we brought this item forward. This doesn't say the city should hire an economic development officer.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
And that would be obviously up to council's discretion.
I just was wondering if somebody should, was debating that the city should take a more active role in seeking businesses that may want to come to play.
There was very limited public input on this. People didn't come to the meetings to testify. There was no one there, so you didn't have members of the public saying that. The Economic Advisory Committee is people doing that, people yeah. trying to be more active and taking yeah. a role in that. So there were, you had some of those players in the room.
Yeah, I just was wondering, you know, if there was a way of stating it inside the policy that would indicate that we're active more, we're thinking to more, we're participating in a more positive way to attract economic development. And I'm nitpicking, but I'm just was wondering if that was part of it.
I mean, it's in here. Like, for example, yeah. goal number one on page 3-8, it says, it is the city's goal to encourage the development or expansion of businesses which will provide expanded employment opportunities for the city residents, diversify the city economy, and generate a strong tax base to fund services. That's the first goal in here. So it is written, I think, in the frame of mind that you're yeah. talking about. And then there are a number of policies that try to promote yeah. that goal. But it does not get to the specific, to the point of saying, you know, the city should hire this person or the city should do that thing. And it also doesn't make that broad kind of statement saying, well, the city should do more.
Yeah. Okay. I just was wondering if that was ever raised by anybody else. Okay, we have a motion on the table, and it has been seconded. And the motion, Michael, would you repeat the motion again for me, please?
Yeah, the motion by Mr. Olson, seconded by Mr. Hawkins, was to preliminarily approve the economic development element of the 2016 City of Blaine Comprehensive Plan.
Okay. Any other comments or questions? Hearing none, I call for the vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
And you say opposed, say nay. Motion carried 6-0. Next item on the agenda is Ordinance 16-2878, amending Chapter 2.54, the Unified Code Enforcement. Michael, that's you again.
Yes, it is me. At the last council meeting, Madeline Otley, our code enforcement officer, our community planner, was gave a presentation to you on some proposed code amendments in a study session format and some proposed amendments to the unified fee schedule. After review and going back over the unified fee schedule, we discussed it with the finance director and determined that there were no new fees on that or no increased fees or changed fees. It was really language referencing where the fees applied yeah. and where the code sections were. So the unified fee schedule amendment is no longer needed. It's administratively just changing some of the language in there. But there is still the code amendment required to make some minor changes to the code. It would clarify the civil penalties and the issuance of administrative fees, so to make the tie to the unified fee schedule more clear. And what it does is it says it applies on a daily basis, not on a per incident basis. In other words, if you have five violations on your property all at the same time, a junk car, an overgrown vegetation, debris in the view, you don't get hit for every one of those. You just get one time penalty. But it's a daily penalty, so if you don't clean it up, it does amass over time and can become expensive, which is, of course, why we try to get people to take action before we have to issue some formal notice. So that's the first item. The second is to allow the hearing examiner to reduce or eliminate those monetary penalties if they determine that there were mitigating factors. So it gives the person an opportunity to stand in front of the hearing examiner and say, I was trying. I was working on it. These are the things that were going on. These are how we were moving forward. And so the hearing examiner has authority to reduce those fees or potentially eliminate them completely. It does also include a statement, though, that the responsible party, so if it's determined that the property owner is, in fact, responsible for the situation that is occurring on their property, and they are ultimately the responsible party, so if it's their tenants, it's still them because it's their property, But if they are determined responsible and in fact have a violation, they are also responsible for the hearing examiner's fees. So if they are essentially guilty, they are responsible for the hearing examiner's fees. The city doesn't pay those fees. And that might be an instance, for example, where the hearing examiner might say, well, since your hearing examiner fees are equivalent to your fine, I will waive the fine under these circumstances, and so the other person isn't getting hit that hard. The hearing examiner appeal time frame is also clarified. There was a discrepancy in the code. In one place it said 30 days, and in another place it said 15 days, and so we've just clarified that 15 days in both instances. So if a person gets their notice, they have 15 days to appeal, and that's consistent with the other 15 days that they would have to say, I did it. There's another part of the code that says, yes, that's true, I did this, and I'm going to fix it now. And so that those line up, those two timelines. So they're minor. All of these are really very minor. The rest of the code and the structure and the process that we all talked about stays very, very much as was discussed. But as we're implementing, right, we're writing policies, we're figuring out exactly how this works when you're working with someone on it, and we're writing notices and letters to people. We found a couple of these little tweaks that needed to happen to make it all make sense. So we're asking you to pass Ordinance 162878 to clarify that. And as I said, there won't be a unified fee schedule amendment that goes with us.
Okay, staff recommends the council waive the second reading and pass Ordinance 16-2878, adopting amendments to Chapter 2.54, the Unified Code Enforcement.
I so move.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Are there any questions or comments?
Just one question from Michael.
Yes, Dennis.
Michael, on absentee owners, if you can't contact somebody, if you just don't get any response, that just goes through the process.
It does. It goes through the process. So we send, let's say they're out of the country, an owner out of the country. We send mail to them. We go through.
Registered letters?
You can't send registered letters from the United States to Canada. They won't do that. We could theoretically drive to a Canadian post office and send mail through their similar process, but the registered mail doesn't work that way from country to country. But we would proceed. We would send the notices. That's actually the question on registered letters is one of the reasons why it says via. It has both options for mail for us because we know that will occur. But we proceed. We go through the options. If they just refuse to recognize us at all, we go to the hearing examiner. It eventually becomes an issue that is they would be found guilty most likely for failure to say they weren't doing anything wrong. We would present our case. Theoretically, we would win. It would proceed to a lien. We would go to court and get the ability to go on their property and correct the situation, and it would just occur. We would still continue regardless of whether they are in the country or are out of the country, are a tentative owner or an absentee owner.
So the lien would be on the property then.
Yeah, it ends up being a lien on the property eventually, and I suppose I'm not really sure. I'm not in court very often. But I know that for example, a criminal issue, there would be probably a notice, there would be a warrant for them. And if they came into the country, they would be so notified, I imagine. And that might eventually come into this process as well.
Other questions? Okay, their motion is on the table to have the council waive the second reading and pass Ordinance 16-2878. Adopting amendments to Chapter 2.54, the Unified Code Enforcement. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Hearing none, the motion is carried 6-0. Next item on the agenda is Resolution 1683-16, the Shoreline Master Program Conditional Approval. Michael, I assume that's you.
Still me. So this is a resolution. I'm going to take a step back, actually. The process for a shoreline master program is that the city goes through a lengthy public process, starts out with a lot of analysis of the conditions of the shoreline, We look into restoration. We look into public access. We present all that information to the public. We bring it through public hearings at the Planning Commission by law. And then ultimately it goes to the City Council for review and consideration. When the City Council finds it acceptable, the City Council states their intent to adopt and forwards it to the state. The state has final approval to determine if our Shoreline Master Program is acceptable or not. And so the Department of Ecology then holds a public hearing, reviews the document, holds a public hearing, and they will potentially send back recommendations for changes. So we're at the step where the council would express their intent to adopt. It's been through many public hearings at the Planning Commission, many open meetings that weren't public hearings, and it's taken a long time. In fact, it's taken way longer than it probably should have. Most of that is just simply because of other work getting in the way, things like development projects, which we want to process in a very timely manner, and things like this slip to the back burner. But nonetheless, we're finally done, and I'm very pleased. The Planning Commission has recommended approval of the draft that you have. So we gave you a book. Gave you two books, as a matter of fact. One with the color illustration on the front is the Shoreline Master Program and the key documents that go with it, like an amendment to Title 17, which would be the new permit processing requirements. The nice thing about having that in Title 17 is we get to modify that a little bit if we need to. We can make changes to Title 17 without going to the state, whereas the Shoreline Master Program has to go back to the state even for small changes. This also has the map in it, which is the Shoreline Environmental Designations, which is kind of like the Shoreline Zoning in a sense. And then it has the Shoreline Master Program Submittal Checklist, which is something that has to go to the Department of Ecology. And it notes on each of these blocks where that particular item of state law, the WACS or the RCW, are addressed in our plan, and if there are any comments that we have. For instance, it might say something like agriculture, and we say not listed because we don't have any agriculture. It's not a permitted use in the city. But generally, it says where you can find that in our plan. And then the other information, these are not parts of the plan, but these are the supporting documents for the plan, the public access plan, the restoration plan, the shoreline inventory and analysis. So the Planning Commission has reviewed all of the documents and has been very, very involved in drafting the Shoreline Master Program, very engaged. They recommend approval of this document as it stands. I have a couple of clarifications to their recommendation that are in your resolution. One is, when they were asking us to address a letter that was sent by the attorneys for the resort, they being the Planning Commission, I realized that we neglected to include a couple of sentences or two sentences in a specific section. So we made the other changes, but not that one. I caught that when I was going back over things. So that was something the commission intended to happen, but didn't occur in their version. And then the other thing was a change to the map. It was the Planning Commission's intent to have all of the built facilities at Semiahmoo Spit included in the Semiahmoo Special Management Unit. And the way the map was drawn, it was a little unclear right at the top of the spit, at the north side of the spit, if you can picture it, right where the hotel is, and there are those docks just north of the hotel. It was a little unclear on the map version that we had at the Planning Commission whether those were in or out of the special management unit. If they're out, it makes a really big difference because they're in the aquatic management area. They're in the aquatic designation, which means an entirely different set of rules. Basically means you can't rebuild the dock. It basically says that you can't improve the historic building that's on the dock and turn it into like a banquet facility or things like that, which you could do in the special management unit. So we wanted to make sure the map was clear. That was the Planning Commission's intent. So those are the only changes that staff's bringing forward, are those two to capture the intent of the Planning Commission. Otherwise, the document is exactly the same, and we would send it forward to the state that way. What Council Member Stewart mentioned earlier was some concern after the Planning Commission took action that came up as a result of some discussions with the Resort Semiahmoo Resort Association. And that had to do with vegetation. So I prepared some proposed language for Councilmember Stewart and Councilmember Greeno to look at. That language is on the screen here. It's probably only readable for you if you look back there. But to add another policy, supporting private organizations, homeowners associations, and individual property owners to conserve vegetation on lands they own and regulate, including support of efforts to revegetate with native species and control invasive species. So the policy supports the efforts of homeowners associations and other similar organizations on lands they own and regulate. So, for example, in the instance of the Semiahmoo Resort Association, they do own some property. They also regulate all of the private property within the boundaries of the plats that are members of the association. So Drayton Hillside, 1 and 2, they're in the association, so the properties that are within 200 feet of the water there are under shoreline jurisdiction, but they're also under SRA jurisdiction, and this would address and support their efforts in that regard. But it's just a policy statement. Policies are not rules, they're guidance. And then down below, added on past all of the rules and discussion about vegetation removal, managing vegetation, keeping a certain amount of vegetation, like 35%, you're allowed to remove 35% of the view obscuring vegetation on your property so that you can open up and have views under the city's plan. But it doesn't go so far as to say some of the things that a homeowners association might say, like you're not allowed to remove any trees over 6 inches diameter. That might be a rule. That's not our rule. And then we added two requirements, two regulations there. The administrator may require coordination with the homeowners associations regarding vegetation removal and vegetation management within their association boundaries. In other words, it gives the administrator the authority to say, you have to go to the homeowners association and provide me proof that you either have consulted with them and gotten a response from them, or at least you have tried to consult with them, because there's the possibility a homeowners association may go defunct or may be silent and unwilling to communicate with someone. And so that gives the administrator the option of requiring coordination, but it doesn't mandate a response from the association because they might not get one. The administrator will work to advise property owners that private land use controls such as CCNRs may preclude or more strictly regulate vegetation management than this program may allow. So in other words, the administrator will advise property owners that they should consult with their homeowners association when there may be those kinds of regulations. This is a recommendation for council's consideration, I think being brought forward by Councilwoman Stewart, if I understood correctly what you had said earlier. We had a conversation today and prior about the idea of the city's ability to just defer to the association, and I would advise strongly against that, because we don't really have the legal authority to transfer our legal authority to another entity. Our legal authority is granted to us by the state, and it is for us to exercise. We can't pass it to someone else. And so this gives us the option of coordinating and working with and advising about the association, and it requires the association to step in and enforce their own rules and regulations. So I think this is a good middle ground. We have added a lot there in regards to making sure that the dots are connected.
Michael, if a question is, if I understand this, then it would be advisable for a property owner to go through the association first.
It could be, yeah. It depends. Because they really need to consult with both parties. It doesn't make any sense to go through with either party to the end before speaking with the other party. So I would have to say no, it doesn't make sense for them to go to a homeowners association, get all their ducks in a row, get approval to do something, and then come to us and say, look, we have our homeowners association approval to do something, and then for us to say, that's fine, but it's against the law. You're not doing that. So there needs to be the consultation in both parts.
Well, I guess then the question is, how do you get the homeowners association to be in line with, I would call it minimal requirements that we have from the state?
The homeowners association in this instance, the primary homeowners association that we're talking about, SRA, has in a number of instances more stringent regulations. And so if we were to, so that getting them in line with our minimum is not the issue. you could say getting us in line with their minimum would be the issue, but that would be imposing the Semiahmoo Resort Association's rules on all the property owners.
But it seems like if you don't get these things in line to begin with, before anybody does anything, that everybody's opening up a can of worms.
We've been doing it since 1985. Is all I can tell you. Since the SRA was founded and formed, we've had a shoreline master program since before then, and we've been coordinating since then. Occasionally, people have done things like come to the city and been told this is what they can do, and then gone to SRA and told the SRA something different than we told them and cut down more trees or gotten approval. And then we've come in and say you have to mitigate for those trees. There'll always be some of those kinds of things, but the vast majority of them work well.
Mary Lou, does that
solve the problem? Yeah, I think both Paul and I are happy with the addition. I don't know about you, Harry.
I think it's good.
I think, as you say, you aren't going to get everything because of the legal implications. And unfortunately, a lot of it you're depending on the good nature and faith of people, and you just hope that they abide by common sense.
The most powerful tool in here is J, the administrator may require coordination. Yeah. So in other words, it gives the shoreline administrator the option in a shoreline area where they think the person might not be telling them quite what the homeowners association told them, or the person might not be telling the shoreline administrator the rules as passed on to them. They can say, you have to. I have the ability to tell you, you have to go coordinate with them and bring back evidence of that. So that has a lot of authority where we don't have that in our shoreline stuff today. And in fact, in our shoreline regulations today, people are allowed to take a lot more vegetation out than SRA allows. This changes quite a bit. We're going leaps and bounds towards where the SRA is. It's not the same. If we were to do that in other neighborhoods, I believe that some of the property owners in those neighborhoods would say, whoa, time out, and we're trying to balance that.
Okay, now.
This makes it a little bit more complex, Mr. Robinson, so
yes.
Perhaps someone in their recommendation, they might want to move to adopt Resolution 1683-16 with all those words, as it says in there, as amended per discussion. Sherry, mm-hmm. Would that be acceptable to you? Because we have it here visually.
Okay, staff recommends the council adopt Resolution 1683-16, expressing the intent to adopt an update of the Shoreline Master Program and authorizing the submittal of the proposed Shoreline Master Program update to the Washington State Department of Ecology as amended. Anyone care to make a motion to that effect? Charlie moves.
I'll second it.
Mary Lou seconds. Any questions or comments?
Just one.
This
is going to go to the state. Would the addition of these comments be a problem?
I don't think so. I don't know for a fact, but I don't think so. These don't take anything away. They only add. So I don't think they would be a problem. On the other hand, I fully expect this to come back from the state with recommendations for changes. So it's not really going to matter if it does. Yes, you're probably getting it back anyway. When you're creating this much of a new regulation, and Blaine, I will say, has taken a more property rights-oriented approach to this, it's highly likely the State Department of Ecology is going to say, you need to make a couple changes here and there. And I would doubt this is one of the ones that they'll be interested in.
Okay. There's a motion on the floor for the council adopting 1683-16 as amended. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Motion is carried 6-0. Okay, that brings us to the commission, committee, and board reports. First item on the agenda is the Blaine Economic Development Advisory Committee. Okay, thank you, Mr. City Manager. Blaine Tourism and Advisory Committee, Mr. Lawrence.
No report.
Blaine Chamber of Commerce, Bonnie, no report. WTA Board, Paul Greeno.
No report.
Drayton Harbor Shellfish Advisory Committee, Charlie.
No report.
Dennis, you have several.
The library, they reported on their concert. Yeah. Senior Center. As of today, I talked to Dana. They're working on the floor. I think that plan is about to go today. And the Boys and Girls Club, I did not see Chris this week.
Okay. Planning Commission, Mr. Jones.
No report for the Planning Commission, but I realize that I neglected to mention during the study session that the Park and Cemetery Board, in their review of the four alternatives, their recommendation was for alternative one, which was the wider two-lane road alternative. And so that is something that I need to make sure that you know, because I forgot that one.
Okay. Public Works Advisory Committee, Raven.
Our next meeting is a week from Thursday, April 7th, and it promises to be riveting. Riveting.
Sounds exciting. Small Cities Caucus, Mr. Wilbert.
Just a brief report on regarding the caucus. The sheriff and the county executive attended the meeting and talked about the email that we all received from the county council regarding the jail. And if you recall, that memo had a resolution attached to it, which basically asked cities to step back and endorse the council's interest in revisiting the jail and, you know, coming back with a new plan, with the suggestion that they would have an election sometime in 2017 or beyond. The sheriff and the executive were very much opposed to that. They were very much interested in staying on task, on course, and asking the county council to, you know, utilize the information that had been already amassed and made recommendations for things like purchasing the land that on La Bounty Road so that the jail could be built. So that almost the entire meeting was talking about that. And as a result of that conversation, the caucus agreed that it probably would be in the interest of small cities to send a letter off to the council asking them to reconsider, you know, using the information that we've already gathered, the analysis, and anything else that's necessary to keep the project on the timeline that was originally part of the resolution that council agreed to last spring and summer and fall. So that's the kind of story behind that. There was also a discussion about a potential EMS initiative that's going to come forward from the county to fund the EMS program. Probably Henry might know more about that than I do. My only comment about it was I think it should be run as effectively as possible. And there's kind of this conversation about which delivery service is the most cost-effective, BLS or ALS, ALS being the more expensive. They've shown that BLS services are very effective, which are significantly less expensive than ALS. So I don't think I've made much traction on that. I think they're already set on an ALS system. But I think that's going to come forward soon. You can comment maybe in your report if you have anything. That's the end of my report.
Okay, thank you. Mr. City Manager, we've got the Finance Committee.
No report.
Okay, Whatcom Council of Governments, no report. And we now have the North Whatcom Fire update. Chief Henry Hollander.
Just to follow up on the city manager's report on the EMS levy, I just found out about it recently, too. And what it's trying to do is redirect where the funding is coming from the medical transport services in the county. Right now, the county pays $1.6 million and the city pays $1.4 million annually to help fund the EMS services in Whatcom County and the city of Bellingham. And this resolution would impose a new tax, I think around a 30-cent tax, that would then replace those million-dollar donations that are being made by the county and the city. So they're looking at a long-term financing for EMS services in the county and a solid funding source. And that's sort of where that levy is looking to go. And, of course, it's running in conjunction with the jail and which ballot do you put it on and what's the most important. And that's one step higher than my level. So I can get more information for you as that comes along.
Okay.
A couple other things I have to share with you tonight is our chief's report. It's got all our statistics on there, and you can see that we're on track to run about 4,000 911 calls this year. And for the month of February, we ran 311, so we're up to over 626 through the end of February. For Blaine and Semiahmoo, the response time is down a couple of minutes for Semiahmoo. We had 7 calls out there and 72 for the city of Blaine for the month of February. I won't go through too much more detail there unless you have a specific question. I'll let you read that. But what I found was really exciting, and one of my staff members brought that to my attention, that they were reading the Vintage Fire Truck and Equipment magazine, which I'm sure you all have copies of. And in that magazine is an article about the fire engine that was that the city of Blaine purchased in 1924. And it was actually the only fire engine. I checked that with Mike. He was here. From 1924 to 1950. Sorry. That was the city.
It was still on the road when we got it.
It was still on the road. It was so there's a nice article in there, and I made giant color pictures. I don't know why.
Is that the one currently at Semiahmoo?
No. But it's been completely restored by Maple Valley, and it's in a museum, and it was actually the city of Blaine.
Kind of looks like it.
From 1924 to 1950.
The horse died.
So I made a copy of that article for you. It's got some great pictures and an interesting story. And I thought that was quite unique. Because you don't often find your fire trucks once you dispose of them, they end up going to a scrapyard. I think that's all I've got.
Chief, you know the Soshin Girls Band was here. And I just wanted to compliment Leslie Smith on the job that she did. Really outstanding.
Great.
She did an excellent job. It was a wonderful event.
Good. I'll let her know.
So you can pass that on to her if you'd like.
And at the same time, I'll ask her for another recipe. In some sense.
Tell her with her comment. We expected at least another recipe.
Another sampling. There you go. Okay.
Thank you very much. Okay. We now have department reports. First item is Public Works, and there's 2 items on here. And the first item is the Vista Terrace LID update.
What does it say first? Just kidding.
It says Public Works, and then A, Vista Terrace LID update.
I was going to say the
best for last. Okay, well, reverse it if you like. You want to do project updates first?
If I could, sir. Okay. Make sure to
A is now project updates.
Wonderful. So a couple of quick things. First, for anybody interested, and I'll just put them in the back of the room here, our city-sponsored rain barrel workshops are coming back up, one at the senior center here and one at the Birch Bay Water and Sewer Office. So this is an event that we sponsor every year, and if you haven't done it, it's a lot of fun.
When is that again?
Should have saved a copy, huh?
I just wanted to test your memory, you see.
21st, 1 and 3 is 4. Okay. So April 21st is the one in Birch Bay, and April 23rd is the one here in Blaine. And, you know, like I said, tell your friends, neighbors. It's a fun thing to do. I'm glad I did the one that I did. Quick update on our well projects, the 5.1 and 8.1, and this goes back to the delays in getting the telemetry in the well field. So when we pulled the pump from well 5.1, which is supposed to go into 8.1, they had some concerns about the well screen. And so we actually hired somebody with a really cool camera that just dangled all the way down and was able to do little 360s down the entire well shaft. And we're taking a little bit more time with that project, so we've decided to release the 8.1 project first. It's currently out to bid on our small works roster now, and we have a plan in action to address 5.1. Probably won't be seeing a bid award on that until May. So our thought was get at least the same amount of water that we had last year. We have 5.1 down. We want to have 8.1 running. So that was our first priority. And then the second priority was to have a plan so that we would have 5.1 as we get into the deeper summer months. So I think we're on track. We're following it very carefully. And we're putting full support behind our consultants to make sure they get the job done right. But it has been a little hair-raising. Speaking of hair-raising, we had a little fun in the last windstorm. Nothing major in terms of outages, really. I hear PSE was some places down as much as 3 days. We had one small outage on pipeline, but we did have a little excitement on Mitchell. I don't know if you got to see the double-decker line trucks out there, but we'll do some repair work when we do the Mitchell Avenue project this summer. So the fix that they did was temporary. The plan is to underground that entire section. And so when we're going through the bridge and doing the sidewalk and doing all that, we're going to bury some conduits so we can do that appropriately. The Mitchell Avenue project is going out to bid next week, so you will be looking for award in the second meeting in April, I believe. I wanted to let you know at this point, because of the work that we need to do at both bridge approaches and because of the fact that the majority of the work will be done when school is out, we are looking at closing Mitchell with a detour. The current plan right now is that the contractor would be putting out what we call variable message signing. So the signs would be, you know, giving people a really good, okay, can't go this way, you got to turn around. For July 4th, of course, we need that for the detour. We'll use the variable message signs for the July 4th weekend detour. So not going to be particularly pretty, but unfortunately, we learned this with H Street. There's really no way to do those approaches any differently other than a lot of night work, which is going to be very expensive. So just wanted to give you a heads up about that. North Harvey, our crew is done putting in the underground conduit. We're pulling wire this week. Accordingly, I have drafted a letter that is going out to all the residents on North Harvey. It should be going out tomorrow, essentially just letting them know what we're doing and that we will be contacting them shortly regarding the actual cutover to PSC. We also inform them there will be no cost to them thanks to your previous work with our code. And PSC and the city are going to be meeting next week to talk more about the specific details about the cutover. Cutover is essentially when their power and their meter is disconnected and our power and our meter is connected. So this is good because there's a limited number of residents. It's going to be our first cutover for East Blaine. Work out any of the hitches so when we do Vista Terrace, which will be later part of this year, the electrical component, we'll have it all figured out. That's the long plan. So that takes me as a good segue to Vista Terrace. And and Sherry's got me. So Dave's going to hand you a timeline that we created. First, to let you know, right out the door, we are looking at extending or sending out a letter this week to extend the deadline for hookups and deferrals. At this point in time, out of the 60 properties, some of which are vacant, seven in fact, we have approximately a 50% response. So of the remaining properties, we have received seven deferral requests and we have quite a few utility requests that we're processing. So I wanted to talk to you quickly just about the deferral process. Originally, we gave residents till March 15th. But at that time, we also were still working on the actual details with the health department. And so we have since had some communication with the health department and a little bit of back and forth about what's the best way to do this, because they're not really that accustomed to doing 60 inspections in one place by request. That's not the way they do business. So in any event, we've worked with the health department and have come up with a plan. And essentially what it entails is if a property owner requests a deferral, if they have a permit and their system is in good operating order and, you know, their inspections are current, they're likely to get that deferral. So this whole question of what is a modern system and what isn't. Our code, however, doesn't allow a deferral for a septic system with no permit. That certainly gives us a very good indication of its age and its construction and so forth. So that would be an automatic no if there's no permit. And again, the other two criteria are it's functioning well, so that should have a recent inspection by the property owner or their septic designer, as all of us in the Drayton Harbor watershed are required to have every 3 years, who are on septic. I should clarify that for, I think, all of you are on sewer. I'm on the very southern edge of the watershed, so I have the same requirements as our friends on Vista Terrace. And then if there's a concern, whether it's the age of the system or because of conditions that we found at the time of construction relating to septic soils and so forth, the health department will come and do a dye test inspection at our request. So that's kind of what we negotiated with them. If there isn't a concern and they have a current file with the health department, then the deferral would be approved. So we are processing those now, but our thought was, now that we have the criteria down and we can explain it a little bit better to the folks that signed up at the meeting a couple, 3 weeks or 4 weeks ago, we would extend that deadline a little bit to accommodate. And similarly, because of the wet weather that we've been having, we wanted to extend the deadline for connections as well. It's just, we don't want it to be any more difficult than it should be. We're getting down to the final, literally, with getting information back from our engineer. So once the construction is complete, they generate what we call as-built drawings. So any changes made in the field are picked up so that we have the most current information for our records. Along with that will come their bill, which will be the final cost to the project, at which time Jeff will be developing the final assessment roll, working with the fund administrator and so forth. Around that same time, we're going to come to you on the meeting on the 11th and set the hearing date for the assessment. So we're not going to have the hearing. We're just going to do a resolution to set the date. At that time, we will be coming to you for action just on how to best administrate the grant portion of the project. So we have recommendations for you, and they involve a couple of decision points. We want to get your direction so that we could follow that with a community open house with the residents. We're thinking on or around the 18th of April, where we will update them on your direction, where we're at with cost, what the next steps on the project will be. Those next steps will be then the public hearing. So you'll be setting the date on the 11th. The public hearing we're holding on the 9th of May. The reason why we wanted to have a little bit of a delay there was give us an opportunity after that community open house to work individually with property owners and try to tie up as many loose ends as we could. And then you have the option at that time of continuing that hearing. If you did, we would have the final adoption on the 23rd of May. It is our intention before that August 31st deadline to send out a reminder letter to folks. We thought mid-July. That way it doesn't come up as a surprise. And then the first payment, although that's not on here, would be a year after your final adoption. So now we're into the first payment being in the middle of next year. So that's my Vista Terrace update and my project update. Are there any questions?
Dennis, how many deferrals did you get requests for?
We have received 7 deferral requests at this time. I actually have a little map for those of you that are interested that kind of shows where the deferrals are with the D, sewer, okay, so on and so forth. I think we showed these to you at our last meeting. Yeah. And we, yeah.
7 deferrals?
Yeah, I got one last time. Did you get it last time?
7?
Yeah, so this hasn't changed since the meeting on the 14th. At least we haven't updated it. We have received some more utility requests since this time, but we have not updated the map since then. So just it gives you a good idea of the properties that have no permit, as an example, which one of those might have asked for a deferral at this time. The ones that are on sewer that are in the dark green are folks that were on sewer before the project, and the folks that are on sewer post-2014 in the lighter green are the folks that have connected since the project was built. So, and like I said, we do have utility requests we are currently processing. We got quite a flood of them, as you might imagine, with the deadline approaching. So that's really all I have prepared for you. If there are no other questions, I'll turn it on over. Thank you.
Which one do you need? What happened to the party? Michael, are you going home? You want me to hit it?
Here.
Yes, yes, sir.
Just go up there.
Slow counting. Okay. I've lost my agenda. Okay, the next item is the Community Development Services. Mr. Jones.
A couple of brief updates. The first thing I wanted to mention is that Ed Yerkelevitz is retiring on Thursday after, I'll have to look this up, but I believe 13 years of service. And we are having a reception for him in this room at 3 p.m. on March 30th, which is on Wednesday. And, of course, you're all welcome to attend. He doesn't really want a big deal, but we wouldn't let him not have anything. So we're just going to have some cake and 30th? A little on the 30th. Yeah,
it's a Wednesday.
Yes. And so he'll be here on the 31st, but I'm sure he'll have extreme short timer's disease at that point. So you might want to be careful about talking to him. He's going to be hard to replace, literally and figuratively. We have been working through a hiring process and advertising for going on about 5 weeks now. Our first round of advertising brought in no one who was qualified. We got applications, but no one qualified. Our second round of advertising, it looks like we may be interviewing one or two people. And if you look on things like the AWC JobNet, which is the Association of Washington City's electronic job posting site, you'll see that there's a lot of hiring going on for plans examiners, building inspectors, permit technicians, permit specialists. It's because the development activity has increased to the point that now everyone is needed again. And guess what? A lot of them are retiring. So there seems to be a little bit of a shortage. Our salary is in a reasonable range. We might be a little low, but we're also not asking someone to work on Bainbridge Island or in Bellevue. So it seems to make sense when you look at the numbers. In any case, we are currently working with two consulting firms who will be taking over quite a bit of our plans review on a contract basis for a period of time. So we're working in an arrangement where the applicant will pay them and we will credit the applicant for that fee. So we'll continue to operate as usual. That's something that we did in the past when we had too much development activity. So it's not a unique situation. It's just that we don't have the person in-house. Now, Cliff, our building inspector, is able to do a lot of plan review, but he won't be able to do all the plan review and do all the building inspection. So he's still doing some of the single family, but I just want to make sure you know, even though we haven't replaced that, we do have the situation handled. And again, that's Wednesday at 3 p.m. in here, in case you want to come by and say goodbye. You'll probably see Ed around town. He won't be going anywhere. He plans to continue to live in Blaine. In fact, he plans to move into the city limits if he can find a place that he wants to live. He lives right outside of town now. The other thing I wanted to mention was that staff has been working on the needs assessment process to hire a consultant to look into some of the facility needs. This has grown out of the Open Space Committee's recommendation that you all received and the idea of going out for a levy to support parks and open space, but then also the need for other facilities like a library, perhaps, or improvements to other city facilities. And so we have settled on a firm called Beckwith Consulting Group. The head of that is Tom Beckwith, and he will be the lead working with a variety of other partners like architects and engineers and different specialists, finance partners, to determine what the city's needs are, what those would cost if satisfied, and how to go about potentially satisfying them. It's a really big public outreach process. It is currently coined the Blaine Strategic Economic Initiative, and we will see if that sticks. The program is several months long, and right now it's laid out. We have a tentative scope of work. It's not complete, not approved yet, but it looks like it's a six-month process. One of the challenges with that, though, is that the full six-month process potentially costs more than is budgeted this year. You'll remember in our budget discussions, we talked about $50,000 this year, potentially $50,000 next year. Of course, we don't do a two-year budget, so next year is not a guaranteed fund yet. We did get some funds from the grant, from the port through their program. So we actually have 70 available this year, and we're trying to work out exactly how we go through the process and work within the budget, or potentially if council wants to allocate additional funds. The biggest issue is we'd like to get started right away, but we don't want to get sort of like to the fifth or sixth or seventh step in the process and say, well, now we take a break for a few months and wait until 2017. We'll have more discussions with you about that, but we're fleshing out exactly how that works. And looks like a really qualified group. They've done a lot of things like this before, and we're really pleased.
Have they worked with any of the local cities?
The local cities, I don't recall. But, yeah.
Very large volunteer
They've actually done work locally in a while back, but not necessarily this kind of work exactly in some of the Whatcom County cities. But I think that Dave makes a great suggestion there. The Chehalis one is very similar to what we're talking about. It's a great example.
Michael, will we be including other groups like the Park and Cemetery Board and the Library, Friends of the Library?
Yeah, so we're fleshing out exactly how all of that will work, but preliminarily it looks something like this. There's an initial outreach meeting which will invite all of the members from all of those groups to come if they can, but it's just a preliminary outreach meeting to say, look, this is what we're working on, this is what we're doing. It's a talking meeting rather than a listening meeting from our perspective. And then we'll be meeting, setting up individual meetings with the council and the planning commission, the Park and Cemetery Board, and the Chamber of Commerce, and the ACS volunteers, and the Public Works Advisory Committee, and a long list of all of those, including the Friends of the Library, where we'll be reaching out to the groups. We may ask some of them to coalesce, but we'll be reaching out to the groups. And then, of course, there'll be public forums like that as well to get the ball rolling. That's the reaching out portion. It includes a survey of voters to, you know, see what they would be supporting once we get to a point of knowing what we might want to do, and there's many, many steps. But initially, we'll have the first meeting, which will just be a broad net and say, come on in, we'd like to tell you what we're working on.
If we were going to go for a bond, would we be thinking of this year or a future year?
It would probably not be this year based upon the schedule. There is the possibility still that something might come forward early, like a piece of it. Initially, we've talked about the transportation benefit district idea as an early piece. This is a particularly challenging year. As you can imagine, the presidential election might not be the time that you want to put something on the ballot. So this is a challenging year. The vote that we would be most lined up to hit would be in November, and I don't think we will be smart to do that.
So the next one would be like April?
There's one in February.
February?
Yeah. So that is all still being decided. We're way before any of those answers, though. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So that's all. Any other questions on that?
Any questions for Michael? If not, we'll go to public safety. Chief.
Thank you, Your Honor. Very quick report, since Chief Hollander mentioned it. As of noon today, we have 950 events, calls for service, and crime. So far this year, we're on track to finish the year at about 3,950. Seen how the summer develops. We have our new officer, Brent Green, on the street. He would have actually been here tonight to get sworn in for you, but he and his FTO, Jake Fair, are out on a call right now that they're tied up on, so we're going to introduce him to you here in a couple of weeks at our next council meeting. We're proceeding on the sergeants and interview board are working on our next additional hire, which will probably be entry level. Hopefully I have something to report to you on that at our next meeting. We had a cross-border emergency planning meeting last week at Whatcom Unified Emergency. It's the first one of those that we've had in a couple of years with our new emergency management director, John Gargett. It was very well attended by Lower Mainland and Northern Washington State representatives, and we're rolling that into our Cascadia Rising planning for the event coming up in June. Our ACS folks, including Mr. Greenow, I do believe, are attending our Washington State Communications Academy here the weekend of April 9th and 10th. It's an excellent training opportunity, and we're very appreciative of the folks that are making their way down to that training. And at a meeting, myself and I believe a representative from Public Works tomorrow afternoon at 3:30 to meet with Ms. Brandenberger, who was here talking with you earlier this evening. And we'll report back on that. Anything I can add for you folks?
Questions, comments for the chief? Thank you, chief.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, administrative services. I'm not going to forget you this time.
Thank you. So I wanted to report on a few things. One is the training that was held in Ferndale on March 23rd. Ann McFarlane, who does Jurassic Parliament, was the one who put on the presentation, and we had actually good representation. We had 8 people representing the city, including 2 council members, several staff members, and someone from one of our boards. So it went well, and based on that training, one of the things that we were supposed to bring back to council at some point was another study session on our resolution for rules of procedure. And so when we get through some of the things that are more immediate, I would like to return to that and go over some of the items and tie them in with what we learned at the presentation in Ferndale. The other thing is we've had staff have been working in various areas and also council discussion regarding emergency preparedness. And it was requested that we take a look at how we can present it to the community. We're working on putting information on the website. We will be having a meeting in about 2 weeks with some of the key players, department heads, IT, an employee that also represents ACS, and someone who's an employee who's done work with emergency management. And so what we'd like to do is have that meeting, try and put together an agenda, some of the things that we're planning on doing, and then bringing them forward to keep the council informed. And if the council has any questions regarding that or concerns, I know Council Member Greeno has mentioned some of the ideas that he would like to see take place as far as social media is concerned. Just go ahead and contact me, email, or call me, and I'll try and add that to our agenda for a couple of weeks from now.
Sure, I was just going to mention that meeting we attended was excellent. Would there be any chance to get manuals for the council members who did not attend?
Definitely. That's one of the books that Ann McFarlane sells. She wrote it with her partner for the company. And so we should be able to get a hold of some.
I think it would be excellent just to make sure that we have, at least if we don't have her for a session, at least we've got the manual to review.
Okay, I'll get moving on that so the council has an opportunity to take a look at it before we actually have our next study session.
1, 2, 3, 4.
We'll need 5 of them.
Yeah, 5 of them. But I think it would be an excellent purchase, and it would help us in terms of the rest of the things that we want to consider regarding our own rules.
Okay. Any other questions?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. City Manager. All righty. Okay. Any changes to the calendar?
Not that I'm aware of.
That's good. Okay. Any unfinished business? Any council new business? And I don't know whether this falls under the right area, but I was asked the question today whether churches are charged a commercial rate for their electricity, or
I don't know, sir. I'd have to
are they under some other category? Jeff, you know that?
I think they are under the commercial rate, but we can verify.
Yeah, because they asked if there was any way that we would consider changing the rate for churches, I guess, or for any other organizations. But I guess that hard economic times are affecting everybody. So, but that might be, if they're non-profit, that might be an item for us to consider. So maybe I'll bring that back at a future meeting. Okay, now we're going to break for executive session. We are going to break at 7:49. We expect to be out for how long?
Okay, we'll be back in approximately half hour. The executive session is to review the performance of a public employee pursuant to RCW 42 period 30 period 110, one in brackets, G in brackets. And you're welcome to stay until we return, but we'll be gone for about half an hour. This is interesting. That is really interesting. We got